You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back. Does anybody else want to stay? Let's ride!
I play this song every morning when I'm getting undressed and I'm naked and I'm putting on other clothes, Mike. When I take my nightie off, my slip, and I put my earrings in. Oh, probably one of the best parts of Eyes Wide Shut is the opening scene. Nicole Kidman just getting dressed for the big ball at Ziegler's house. And look at her. Just look at her. Stop looking at me like that, goddammit. Get me so flushed. Good evening, everybody. It's Thursday night. We have waltzed our way through the week so far, and we've only got a couple of hours left in it. So tonight's show is going to be a good one. We have a lot of fun stuff to get to. We have some breaking news that we have to cover first. A little bit of introspective thought on the stuff that we've been covering the last couple of days with the golden shower stuff. Obviously, don't want to beat a dead horse, but just some things to tie things off. Because the one thing that is very, very easy to do is to get emotional about things. Get swept up in the moment. And then just kind of leave things raw. I never want to leave things raw with this show. I want to walk away with things with a little bit more of a toned down, easygoing look at this. Okay, that's not hysteric, not full of hysterics, and to give credit where credit's due and whatever. Well, where I wanted to start is first of all, I have a pretty cool announcement to make about what we're going to be doing with the next couple of weeks. I was talking to Max Sancaparato from Colorado. What's going on, everybody in the chat room? Johnny. What's going on, Murr? What's going on, Nikki? What's going on, Sam? What's going on, Jenny? What's going on, Moonlit Matt? What's going on, Tim? What's going on, Wordna? Wordna was the first one in there. They said first. Chat room is getting livelier every time we go live. But starting next week, I think on Monday, I'm going to have Max Sancaparato come on. And what we're going to do is we're going to start a serial of segments with Max that is going to be focused around Western types of republics since ancient times. And I think the first one that we're going to get around to is dealing with Holland and the Dutch. Now, I was hanging out. I went to have a workout with my buddy Rob today. We were at the park practicing. And afterwards, we went to go get some coffee and an acai bowl from the Brazilian bakery we love going to. And we were talking about the Dutch in particular, I think because, and Murr is in the chat room. I believe that Rob was actually talking to Murr about the way that the Dutch used to trade, have a really, you know, serious types of trade, and they were merchants, and their greatest form of currency at one point was tulip bulbs. Now, we know that that Holland is supposedly like the flower capital of the world. It's one of their greatest exports, I believe. But I wanted to get down into the Dutch as we know them from, right on the other end of the Enlightenment, okay? As one of the most prolific travelers and explorers of the world, a very, very rich culture, and just so many things, They were major players on the world stage for a long time, especially in the exploration and colonization of the New World and all that. And we want to—I want to be able to learn different things about these civilizations and really get into some cozy forms of history. And that will be starting on Monday, I believe. I was talking to Maxine Caparato about that. So look out for that. But as far as what we were talking about over the last couple of days, I think that what's really striking me, and of course the Skype is on, quite frankly, podcast. We're going to take some calls probably in about 10 minutes. At 7:40, we're going to have Alex Plitzis call in. Alex Plitzis is one of our most trusted correspondents of the show. He is a veteran of the Iraq and Afghanistan war, multiple tours out there, and as a team member, an employee of the Pentagon for many years, and just coming back into civilian life not too long ago. The man has done a lot. I'll get a better bio for him after the break. But he's going to be coming on to talk about this last-minute buildup of military presence of the U.S. in Poland and pretty much right there on that Eastern Front as the saber rattling continues with Russia. And I just want to know, you know, how can we be looking at this? What the hell is it? Is it just more of Obama walking out the door and leaving stink bombs behind him for Donald Trump to be forced to clean up? What is it? Because there's other things, other parting gifts that President Obama is leaving us, and there's still seven days left. 6.5 days left? What the hell is it? So it's just like you can't even say, oh, one final parting gift. No, no, no. Down to the last hour, I would not put anything past this president. And of course, we're going to be talking about what has just been changed as far as Cuban immigration policy goes. But that'll be on the other side of this. I like Dutch Masters as well. 138. I know who 138 is. Actually picked up a whole bouquet of Dutch Masters for Lauren. Whenever there's a birthday, whenever there is a holiday, whether it be Christmas, Valentine's Day, Lauren usually gets a nice bouquet of flowers, and in between it are just all of these Dutch Masters sticking out because she's always looking for Dutches. We got to move on to oil and vaping. That's what we got to do. All right, so let's get back to the journalist. All the journalism problems we've been talking about over the last couple of days. The things that have been popping up for me is that journalists need to be able to report facts again. Now, we were talking about last night the irony of what's been brought up in that latest CNN documentary series on the 80s, which was the emergence of network news, and the type of fears that were drummed up when you start thinking about the melding together of news and profit. A network news built on a profit model as opposed to news built on the integrity of the journalists and their work as it pertains to nothing that's political. Just presenting facts, doing good investigative work, and giving it to the people. And of course, what is the point of a free press? The point of a free press is to have a fourth estate to check against government and to check against regulatory bodies that have impact on our lives. And when the press isn't free, and when the press is taking their marching orders from the same types of advertisers, the same types of corporate interests that are also holding the strings of our beloved politicians, then, I mean, the oligarchy, and you talk about Praetorian Guard media, as Mark Levin likes to say, there's your Praetorian Guard. You know, just like the special royal guards that would accompany the Roman emperors around ancient Europe. That's what the media has become. Instead of a checking agent, with all the checks and balances we have built into our own system here, our own system of governance, the media, enshrined in the First Amendment, the free press, is very, very important. So it's funny to see how 30 years later, all of those real, those fears have been realized in so many ways. But we definitely need to report facts again, and we need to be able to discuss the facts on the ground level. And that's what this show is. I'm not a journalist. It's not in the cards for me. I'm a musician. I'm a podcaster. I love broadcasts. I love talk. I have lots of varied interests, and I love socializing. I love the people that we're meeting through the show, that we're bringing in, and the conversations we're having. This show is designed to be akin to sitting on the back porch of your buddy's house on a really warm June night, smoking a cigar, whatever the hell you want to smoke, sipping on whatever you want to sip on, lighting a fire pit, and just kind of sit back and discussing the talk of the day. Everybody's got a different opinion, and that's it. We are not the journalists. So we are 100% subject to all types of error, all types of illogical thinking, and working past irrationality. That's what we do here. We're just trying to whatever. But when we're fed stuff, the problem is that how are people supposed to push past and make any kind of conclusion or settle upon something that is logically sound when the facts that we're being given is only one set of a number of different sets of facts? Everybody believes that they have the facts, and all the facts are different. That's a very, very dangerous situation to be in. So when all those are available to people and the quality of the journalism is deteriorating so fast that, you know, the discourse that is happening on the ground and the discourse and the protesting and the things that people are eating up and internalizing as truth, it reduces debate and it reduces the chance of conversation to mere sectarianism. Because you are now just seeking out news that you want to confirm your biases. You're going to the priests and priestesses of the world, the actors that you like, the actresses you like, the news anchors that you like, and, of course, the political party that disseminates all of the narratives that they're supposed to spin every last happening to fit into the mold. Once you are devolved into that state, which we are sitting in right now, then so much of the talk on the ground is reduced to sectarianism. It's like Jesuits arguing with Baptists, okay, and Catholics arguing with Lutherans or Episcopalians. You know, it's the same thing. It's just like different denominations, and everybody goes off and they have their own interpretation. It's ridiculous. So we need to be able to discuss facts again. So where the hell that goes, I don't know. But also, there was this one article. Here's a screenshot of it. ADL, Trump's Nazi comments trivialize the Holocaust. Because, of course, when he was talking about what we're getting out of CNN, what we're getting out of all of these different news sources, how if it's coming from the intelligence agencies, if they're pumping out shit without even corroborating it themselves, and of course coming from the political parties themselves, that is akin to Nazi Germany. You want to know what is actually trivializes the Holocaust is when you have people comfortable with calling anybody and anything they don't like literally Hitler. And that's all we have heard for the last couple of years. And it's going to keep going. That trivializes the Holocaust. When you sit back and you look at what we have going on over here, the intelligence community needing to be trusted is a big factor of it. Okay, and everything that Donald Trump said about Nazi Germany disseminating corrupted information is a very, very legitimate fear that has historical backing. That does not trivialize the Holocaust. That is a real red flag. Trivialization is when you call everything you don't like Hitler. So those are a couple of things I want to put out there. That's number one. There's one other thing I think I wanted to bring up. And here's another thing I want to do. Yes. I saw this one post on Tumblr, and I loved it because it includes a GIF from The Office, and it's when Michael Scott is, I think it's Robert Dunder or Robert Mifflin, whatever. It's either Dunder, Mr. Dunder or Mr. Mifflin, who comes in to talk to everybody in season four when they're trying to push back against Ryan Howard's ageism. Okay, so they bring in an old guy, the founder of the company, Dunder Mifflin, and they use this GIF, and the caption is, "Do you ever see a post that you agree with on some level, but then it's worded in an aggressive and mean-spirited way, so then you're just kind of like, all right, and you close the door on them, and you say, I can't be a part of this." That's another thing that we have to get around to. And, you know, it's something that I see a lot, and it's tough. And it's another way of bringing up the whole clock being broken, a broken clock being right twice a day. We're in a paradox, and we've always have been, this is nothing new, where you can cast a vote for a person. Cast a vote, the same vote that somebody else that you just can't stand is going to vote, but you're doing it for different reasons. And there are just people who are going to make your side look terrible, because whenever you see an extreme, whenever you see somebody going out there and misrepresenting a stance, it's just like, I can't. That's why I don't post on Facebook anymore. I don't post on Facebook anymore unless if it is a fan page for the podcast. But I don't post on Facebook anymore, and I don't comment on anybody's shit. I don't seek anybody's opinions, nothing, because it doesn't matter how sound of an argument you have. There's always going to be somebody out there ready and waiting to put in some kind of a rah, rah, rah bullshit comment underneath you that you're just like, oh, God, please, please, please stop making people think that I'm on the same page as you. I know you guys all feel, I know you guys encounter it the same way. You're just like, oh, God, this guy showed up again. Please shut up, you know? So, with that being said, I want to move on to Cuba. This happened just a little while ago. Just a little while ago, everybody. Okay, this was posted on the Associated Press at 7:12 p.m. Eastern Time, or at least it was updated. Obama ends visa free path for Cubans who make it to the U.S. soil. Okay, President Barack Obama announced Thursday, this is very important, because this is all part of normalization with Cuba. Now, everybody, normalization just means he wants to normalize trade and interaction with communist oppressive nations, because there should be a lot of people. We should take a step back and really appreciate everything the Cuban government has given to their people or taken from their people. Okay? This is part of the normalization. A very dangerous normalization, if you ask me. And who it affects? Once again, the Cuban people. The embargo on Cuba is not an embargo on the Cuban people. They are suffering themselves. Okay? This was trying to put pressure on a government and isolate them so that perhaps there's a chance that when the time is right and when all the Castros are dead, hopefully, maybe there's a chance that there's some reform or a real revolution out there. President Barack Obama announced Thursday that he's ending a long-standing immigration policy that allows Cubans who make it to U.S. soil to stay to become legal residents. You know, those people that tie together tires and garbage and empty two-liter bottles that are kind of sloppily put together to make flotation devices, to pray to God that they catch a good wind to carry them 90 miles in the right direction so that they can flee the hellhole that they're living in. You know, those people? Well, that's not That's not on the agenda anymore. The repeal of wet foot, dry foot policy is effective immediately. The decisions follows months of negotiations focused in part on getting Cuba to agree to take back people who had arrived in the U.S. For Cuba to take back people. Okay, remember everybody, there's a wide open Mexican border, but of course all the people that come over that border are prone to vote Democrat. Effectively immediately, Cuban nationals who attempt to enter the United States illegally and do not qualify for humanitarian relief will be subject to removal consistent with U.S. law and enforcement priorities, Obama said in a statement. By taking this step, we are treating Cuban migrants the same way we treat migrants from other countries. The Cuban government has agreed to accept the return of Cuban nationals who have been ordered removed, as it has been accepting the return of migrants interdicted at sea. The Cuban government praised the move in a statement read on state television. It's called the signing the agreement, quote, an important step in advancing relations between U.S. and Cuba that aims to guarantee normal, safe, and ordered migration. Obama is using this is all financial. See, because Barack Obama wants to loosen the noose and allow a Hard Rock Havana to be opened up in Cuba so that one of Raul Castro's, you know, cousins can be the manager of the hotel, or that an Apple store is opened up in Havana so one of Raul Castro's nieces could be the manager of she'll be the head genius out there. This is what's going to go on. Some general's son will be the head of the iPhone store out there in Cuba. Because we're trying to loosen the noose a little bit to get American investment and dollars and tourism back into Cuba to legitimize their oppressive government, it's also going to ease the tensions amongst the people in Cuba who are trying to get out and bring their specialties, their know-how, their work ethic, everything elsewhere. Okay, because now you'll be able to import better care from other people. They don't really give a shit about their own people. Okay, and of course that was the biggest problem with all this. Let's go to the Wall Street Journal, because this brought up another thing that I wanted to see articulated. Those who are permitted to remain also may be eligible to receive benefits to U.S. grants to refugees fleeing persecution. The policy essentially encouraging Cubans to flee their country has long been a part of the economic and immigration and foreign policy toolkit used by Washington and has been opposed by Havana, which considers it a drain on its resources. No other immigrants are provided similar allowances. Well, that's because you are the only communist state in the Western Hemisphere, and you should be treated as such. But of course, we have lots of fellow travelers in our own government over here who loves this. And everybody, this just goes to show how against people the left is. How against people they are. I mean, this is unbelievable. Let's keep going a little bit. Mr. Obama's decision to reverse the policy 1 week before he leaves office marks one of his final moves to solidify his effort begun in 2014 to restore U.S. relations with Cuba. Putting Cubans on equal footing with immigrants from other countries, which they should not be, who would be a sign of more normalized relations. I want as many Cubans as possible, of course, that are not criminals or anything like that, because they understand, they have an aversion to Marxism. Okay, they tend to vote a little bit more to the right. They know what the end of the progressive road looks like. They've lived in it. Now, the dangerous thing about this is, I wanted to get back to the other thing is, this is the reason why all their skilled workers are leaving. the people who are doctors, who are medical-minded, that are being enslaved by the government and given meager earnings to be put to work because, of course, everything has to be subsidized. Everybody looks at free health care. They're like, oh, isn't that great? You can walk into a pharmacy and everything is covered, and you can walk into a doctor's office and get online for a couple of weeks to have your knee checked out. But the other thing that it does is it conscripts doctors to pretty much slave labor. That's pretty much what it is. You don't have the right to your own career, to your own practice. You don't have a right to anything. There's no exclusivity, nothing like that. Nothing like that. I want to get back to the AP article because there's something here that I want to get here. Obama is using the administration to end policy. Donald Trump could undo the rule after becoming president next week. I hope he does. He has criticized Obama's move to improve relations with Cuba. But ending the policy that allowed hundreds of thousands of people to come to the United States without visas also aligns with Trump's commitment to tough immigration policies. No, he's going to do the right thing. I know he's going to do the right thing on this. This is completely different. Giving people asylum from persecution is something totally different than opening up the southern border and laying out the welcome mat to anybody who has been brought up in not so much communist rule, but in just very, very far left coddling rule, where you know that this is where the country is going over here too. So it's almost like we're the last lifeboat, the Titanic, and everybody's trying to flood it for political gain. And of course, when it's not necessary anymore, they'll all go. You know, they don't care about who votes what way and who has any kind of opinion in Cuba. It's a one-party system. All right? We still need to give consent. The governed still needs to give consent to the government to do what it does. Once you don't need to give consent, here we are. Now, the thing that really is scary here is that extraditing and sending people back to Cuba, there's no guarantees that those people are not going to be persecuted, jailed, and punished in some way. There's absolutely no guarantee whatsoever. I think there is something very, very vague there, but you're not going to be, as soon as all the cameras, all of the people that went out to Cuba to suck every last government official's dick after Fidel died, and, you know, Michael Moore and his ilk went out there to talk about what great things. Oh, Black Lives Matter. They did a lot of dick sucking out there. They went out there to show what great things Cuba's one-party system did for all the people who are trying to float away from it on trash. And of course, once all the cameras left and the headlines were no longer flashy, we're getting reports of how dissidents and people who are speaking out against the Castro regime have been jailed, and the jailings have increased. Journalists have been locked away. Protesters have been, protests have been banned. That's it. So this is what you're looking at here. This is what we're looking at here. So keep an eye on that, because we still have a week left of the Obama presidency. And if you think that's going to be the final parting gift to the world, you have another thing coming. This was sent to us by Gadget Doc. C-SPAN, an internal issue likely to blame for airing Russian television network. C-SPAN accidentally airing several minutes of programming from a Russian state-run network, likely due to an internal routing issue, the network says. C-SPAN's coverage of the House of Representatives on Thursday was interrupted for several minutes by footage from RT, confusing viewers to no end. Hold on.
At this time, with the bill.
Oh my God, did this happen in the middle of Maxine Waters talking? This is going to be amazing. Hold on. Wait a second. If this happened in the middle of Maxine Waters, this is just amazing.
Hop on the block, the SEC, and literally obliterate.
Right after she said literally. 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 Well, that's good. And the Hollywood Reporter, C-SPAN, says online feed was interrupted by Russia Today programming. Interrupted. Oh, things are just so funny. We live in a really funny place. Real funny place. All right, so Rosie O'Donnell, I fully support imposing martial law to stop the Trump inauguration. So she's, you know, the woman, obviously she's mentally ill and the disease is degenerative. And she probably, I don't know how long before she'll be wheelchair bound, because this has to, you know, beyond cognitive function, it's going to have to start affecting motor skills, right? Whatever she has to start affecting motor skills next. She already has lost her ability to think straight, to think that it's a good idea to take away everybody's rights, and suspend pretty much habeas corpus and everything, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, suspend it all, because Rosie O'Donnell is that scared. Is that scared of Donald Trump? Get over it. Get over it there, big girl. You're a big girl, okay? Get over it. It's over. Stop. We did the broken clock thing. Mattis. General Mattis pretty much cruised through confirmation hearings. Everybody's been cruising through these confirmation hearings. And, of course, I was watching the Pompeo confirmation hearings for CIA head. And to listen to these people talk to someone who's going to be the head of the CIA about LGBT issues and about traditional families and about climate change just goes to show, I'm sorry everybody, it just goes to show where people's heads are, and it's up their asses. Why are you talking to somebody who's going to assume the role of head of the CIA, Central Intelligence, what their thoughts on climate change and people's personal lives are? Has nothing to do with anything. It just goes to show, once again, why these people, and I don't even want to call them Democrats, because it's not, they're not, this is, these are not the parties that you read about in history books when we were kids. These aren't the parties you read about in history books when we were kids. I'm not talking about, you know, I'm talking about like the, when there was some semblance of adherence to the country, nationalism, a healthy sense of nationalism, patriotism, and the Constitution. Whereas you have different modes and methods of wanting to apply that and apply governance. There's just nothing here. What is this? What is this party that you're sitting down trying to see whether or not somebody's going to be able to head up an intelligence agency? And it's going to be really, really important for everybody to know just how much you, as a United States Democrat senator, believe in untraditional, non-traditional marriages and the raising of kids in non-traditional settings. Because that's all it was. It was this virtue signaling weird shit. And I'm telling you, for all of our gay friends, you know, your life's your own. And we'd never really even bring up the issues like this unless it's when people try to piggyback onto your personal lives to push a political agenda onto everybody else and make this the pressing moment of the day when it is clearly not. And I know you want to be left alone too. And I know we have a really nice subset of the overall listening audience that are gay and look at this from the same point of view. Leave us alone. Let us just, you want equality? Then stop painting us all rainbow colors. Stop painting us with neon colors over here so we stand out like sore thumbs. Can we just go along our way? You have these people just sitting there on these committees trying to do a job to say, hey, are you going to uphold the laws on the books? are you going to fulfill the job description that you are looking to be confirmed for? No, it's not about that. It's about how can we push in more of our virtue signaling. And you know what? Keep doing it. Because the more you do it, the more the rest of us roll our fucking eyes. It's just some sad. Leave people alone. Let me say thank you to all my bosses right here. Because I have to call Alex Blitzes in 5 minutes. So guys, please, if you're a new listener, a new viewer of the show, I know you're still vetting me out. But I am live five nights a week, and soon to be an hour and a half a week once we hit our certain goals on Patreon. Patreon.com/quitefrankly. I would love to have you guys support this show in a way that allows me to put more of my time into it and expand it. Expand it. I want to grow. I want to rub shoulders with the big boys on the internet. That's all I care about. I want to be able to bring this conversation to larger places and to have fun with it, because it's not just about politics. Politics is just a dirty radioactive material that we sometimes have to touch through this incubator with the lead gloves and talk about it to try to sift through it and see where the fuck things are going and how we can try to find some kind of a logical way to cut through the noise and live normal lives again. Okay, so it's not about politics. As you saw, it's about history. It's about you guys. It's about human interest stories. It's about philosophizing. It's about knowing where we're going, where we've been, and to get through things in a little bit more of a little bit better way that doesn't give you so much agita. So everybody, if you like the show, but you don't have a lot to give monetarily, please share it with a friend. Share it with an enemy. Share it with a foe. Doesn't matter what the hell it is. Share the channel. Go on iTunes. Spend 45 seconds pressing subscribe. Give me a couple of stars and write a review. That 45 seconds, and I swear to you, it's 45 seconds, does so much for visibility in the iTunes charts. It's unbelievable. But for those of you who have gone to patreon.com/quitefrankly and have subscribed to either the 1776 Club or the 1984 Club, or soon once the chat room gets big, I think we might be able to make another type of club in there that we could form. We can get access to a VIP chat or something. Who the hell knows? Because soon it's going to start scrolling in there too fast for you guys to see, hopefully. So thank you to my bosses. Here we are, the Wall of Fame, just like on Ellis Island. Here we are. This is our Ellis Island wall. Michael Wells, Matt Smith, Rudy Escarcega, Matt DeFabio, who's not here tonight, founder of 1984 Club, Brad Meyer, who is usually always with us, co-founder, love Brad, Nikki Solis with a purple top hat, Sean Collins, Jackie Milam, got to write back to Jackie. Her letters always are just so beautiful to me. Jackie is just a very, very pure, pure soul. Stephanie K. Beauty, another person I love writing to. StephanieKBeauty.com. Check her out. She's a master. Okay? She'll turn you into a demon. She'll turn you into an angel. Whatever the hell you want your face to be, she'll turn you into. You want to be Humphrey Bogart? You'll be Humphrey Bogart. You want to be Lauren Bacall? You'll be Lauren Bacall. That's it. What Rat Pack member do you want to be? She'll fucking make you and rip. Andrew Dame. Christian Peppas of the Amatory Murder. Jenny Lee. There she is. I see her pouting those lips. Look at that, those red lips. She's pouting. Kate McCallum. Laura Veris. Max Ancaparato from Colorado. Eric Reitz. Brian O'Connor Jr. Marianne Hart. Perry and Stacy Rittle. Rob Corrado, who I believe is in the chat room, probably incognito. Whitney McShann. Bren Antilles of Rogue Squadron from the UK and his counterpart, Pierre from Normandy. Koss, my good man Koss. Thank you, Koss. Stephanie Evil from Gaslight.tv. LS Dan Spratlin. Mike May. And, of course, John Giacotto. New man. Tony Federici and Chancellor Ryan V. Ryan Valorum. Of the Galactic Senate. So thank you guys so much for all of your help. All of your help. And for all of you guys that come on more, I need you. And you deserve all the praise that you get. And of course, if you know anybody that has a an all-American business that wants to be a sponsor, by all means, let's do that. All right, I'm going to have to sign out of the traditional... I'm going to have to sign out of the, quite frankly, Skype. And I have to sign into Zen Live TV. Because I got to call Alex Plitzis. I've got to get a... I've got to get a new number. So let's see here. Alex. We're going to get the... So everybody, just so you know, Alex Plitzis is a U.S. Army combat veteran and national security professional specializing in counterterrorism and special operations policy. He has served in Iraq and Afghanistan both in uniform and as a Defense Department civilian. You can follow him on Twitter at Alex Plitzis, and we're going to call him up right now.
Hello?
Mr. Alex Plitzis, you're on the air with me again. How are you, friend?
Good, brother. How you doing?
I'm just chilling. And now we've got about maybe 10 to 13 minutes to talk about what's going on right now. Now, we got about a week left before President Obama finally takes the furniture and gets the fuck out. But aside from that, he seems to be leaving all of these stink bombs behind as he's going. We just heard about what's going on, and we were talking about what's going on with Cuba. But I want you to speak specifically about what you see going on with this military buildup around the Eastern Front in Poland and Ukraine, and what's going on with the saber rattling, this latest round of saber rattling with Russia. Is there anything to be concerned about?
No, quite frankly, it's intended to send a sign that, you know, no further acts of aggression should be coming from the Russian Federation.
Okay.
And quite frankly, if you really wanted me to characterize it, it's a little too late. It's too little, too late from the president.
So you think this should have been a move? This should have been the type of move that he should have put forward earlier in his administration when he had a chance.
And not just earlier in the administration for the sake of doing it. I mean, you don't just casually, you know, send 3,500 troops to full armored brigade. It's actually the brigade I was supporting in Iraq in 2008, the 3rd Brigade, 4th Armored. 3rd Brigade, 4th Infantry Division, but they're armored casually, especially in Poland along the Russian border. It's a pretty strong signal to send. But as Rex Tillerson had sort of said in his testimony before the Senate Committee, for the Foreign Relations Committee, that's something that should have taken place when the Russians came across the border in the eastern Ukraine. And not that it would have actually initiated hostilities, but you know, the Russians are pretty reasonable actors in terms of they understand international norms. And if they would have seen that, the signal would have been, okay, enough is enough. Enough is enough. Don't go any further. But we didn't do that. And then they ended up taking, Ukraine.
So then, okay. So now, no, let's skip forward about a week. We have this mobilization, this little bit of a buildup, and President Trump now takes office about a week from today or so. What do you think the next move is going to be from there? Is there going to be a drawback? Is there going to be a standing firm? What would you be able to project? Even though right now, I mean, that's all we can do. This is all just projections and thinking out loud.
Well, that depends. Any of the unilateral sanctions that have been taken as a result of presidential executive orders, sanctioning individuals or things of that nature, you know, forbidden from doing banking, that's something that he can change with a stroke of a pen. Any sanctions that have been imposed by the Congress he's kind of stuck with, unless the Congress overturns any of those. You know, the president just instituted another round of sanctions when he forbid certain people from doing businesses, and he said the Russian front companies, kicked all the Russian diplomats who were accused of being Russian intelligence officers out of the country. Trump can do that kind of stuff in an instant. He can also reverse any military actions as commander-in-chief in terms of troop deployments along the Russian border, placement of U.S. missile defense systems, treaties, obligations. As long as he's not treaty-bound by Senate, you know, well, actually, as commander-in-chief, I guess it really doesn't matter. It's his call whether or not he's going to enforce it. So he really is going to wield some pretty wide power. But given the testimony that I've heard from General Mattis and Rex Tillerson and our next CIA director and others, they're all following a pretty mainstream Republican approach to national security and not the neocons that you saw, a little bit more restrained. So I think you're beginning to see what was rhetoric on the campaign trail and what was real.
Okay, so actually on that, I was listening to Mattis a bit, and I saw his comments on NATO. You've heard all of the criticisms of NATO from Donald Trump on the campaign trail. Going forward, do you think NATO is going to stay intact? Do you think there's going to be renegotiation and funding and all that stuff? What do you think?
So there is no negotiation for funding. They're treaty-bound. All the member states are treaty-bound by obligation, or obligated by treaty to spend 2% of their GDP on defense, and some people have been lacking because the economies haven't been so good. So I think you've already started to see, in the absence of Trump even getting into office, but with this rhetoric, European nation-states have talked about increasing their contributions. Because they are concerned, and they understand that Trump's complaints to a certain extent are valid. I mean, we invoked the fact that when one NATO member state is attacked, all states are attacked after 9/11, and therefore there has to be a response from all the member states. I mean, I was in Afghanistan in 2012. Granted, it's a little further along in the war, but the United States has the bulk of the forces as usual, and the Europeans contributed. Some of them very meaningfully in numbers, but others just a onesie or twosie here or there. So there certainly is not a proportionate distribution of the responsibilities across the member states. But we are the most powerful nation in the world, so it has to you kind of have to weigh the two against one another. The European economy is not doing so well at the moment. Some of the states are doing better than others, and we are the world's most powerful superpower and military. So I don't think there'll be any significant impact to NATO. No one's going to withdraw from it. It'll be interesting to see what happens with negotiations for future member states along the Eastern Bloc, former Soviet states, who had wanted to become NATO members. Ukraine was one of them, and that was one of the really driving forces behind Russia's actions, because they were very, very unhappy with the prospect of a NATO member state being on their border.
Right.
To be the equivalent of Mexico or Canada becoming an Eastern Bloc state during the Cold War.
Gotcha. Understood. Now, actually, let's talk about Eastern Bloc state. Let's talk about the only communist state in the Western Hemisphere. That's Cuba. What do you think is going to, what do you think is going to be done, reversed, or maintained when Donald Trump comes into office? Now I want to preface this by saying tougher immigration action. Now, I think that there's a lot of sleight of hand tricks here, and of course, it's just because I believe that the current administration considers themselves fellow travelers of the Castro regime, and the way that they like to see government play out in the everyday lives of people, and also, what do you think? You think there's going to be a little bit of a breakaway from the sternness that Donald Trump has put forward on his thoughts with the Mexican border, as opposed to what's going on with Cuban refugees? Do you think that this is going to be reversed? What do you think is going to happen with Cuban and American relations after this transition is complete?
I think Trump will very clearly make his position known to the Cubans, which is that he's expecting greater reforms, which, quite frankly, all of us were. If you were going to open up diplomatic relations to Cuba, there's an expectation that they're going to have, reforms in allowing, free speech, and they're not going to be jailing political prisoners and human rights abuses and whatnot. And the Obama administration chose not to. I mean, it's blatantly clear the sanctions were not working. They haven't worked in many years. I'm not a big fan of sanctions personally, unless they're going to be truly meaningful. In a country where the populace has a say in the government, like the sanctions against Iran got them to the table for the nuclear agreement. Unfortunately, we just kind of as soon as they were willing to come to the table, we were like, okay, great, let's get this done, because they wanted a political win, you know, from the Obama administration, as opposed to saying, okay, if this has caused the Iranians to come to the table and it's starting to get bad, wait a little bit longer and they'll give us what we want. But in places like North Korea or Cuba, where they're dictatorships, and the people are suffering, I mean, it's not like they're going to go to the polls and vote the government out of power.
Right.
So, I mean, in this case, it's only hurting the people, and we're not seeing any sort of policy change that we were hoping to get as a result of sanctions. So the sanctions will remain in place, though I don't think they're really beneficial, and it really depends on what the Cuban government's willing to do.
Very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. Alex, I think we're just going to have a short segment tonight, although I would love to have you back on soon. We definitely have to talk once or twice before the inauguration, so maybe you can come in or something like that. That would be awesome.
I'd love to. That sounds like a plan.
All right, man. Thank you so much for the time tonight, and we'll definitely check back soon.
You got it. All right, guys. Have a good night.
Take care. That is Mr. Alex Plitsis, everybody. He is a longtime friend of the show. And there you go. I'm watching everybody in the chat room mix it up. Thank you guys for hanging out tonight. We have a few minutes left, about 5 minutes left. Let me put on the Turtles. But what do we got here? We talked about Mattis a little bit. I'm going to put that aside. We'll talk about that another time. Imagine me. We talked about, I wanted to talk about this. Robot kill switches and legal status. This is from RT. Well, what do you think? What do you know? Now, we've been talking about legal status and all that shit and robot rights. Holy shit. Everything we've been saying about robots right down to the sex. I saw you guys talking about robot sex and all that shit. You watch. Watch this show is going to be sponsored by a sex robot company one day. Nobody but you for all my life. Okay, here we go. Robot kill switches and legal status. MEPs endorse AI proposal. A European Parliament committee has voted in favor of a draft report that proposes granting legal status to robots, categorizing them as, quote, electronic persons. Guys, it is not speculation. It is not speculation anymore. I love it. The draft report, approved by 17 votes to 2 and 2 abstentions, by the European Parliament Committee on Legal Affairs proposes that, quote, the most sophisticated autonomous robots could be established as having the status of electronic persons with specific rights and obligations, including that of making good any damage they may cause. The fuck does that mean? How are you going to hold a robot accountable for the damage that it causes? Authored by Luxembourg MEP Maddie Delvaux, the report proposes definitions and outlines rules to govern how robots interact with humans. Quote, now that humankind stands on the threshold of an era, quote, that it claims, end quote, that it claims will see artificial intelligence, quote, unleash a new industrial revolution. A new industrial revolution. Well, ladies and gentlemen, when the robots are the leaders of a new industrial revolution, and you don't have people going to work in factories because, you know, the industrial revolution pulled much of the world out of the abject poverty that it was in. The employment opportunities skyrocketed during the time of the industrial revolution. Well, when this industrial revolution is going to be brought in on the backs of robots, what's that going to do to human beings? I don't know. Maybe that's why we're told, hey, listen, don't worry about it. Just vote for big government to take care of you and go do your finger paintings. You're an artist inside. Follow your creativity until you found it. Until you found it. Follow your creativity to a fault, which is not a bad thing. Not a bad thing to have your creative sources in your life, the things that allow you to emote and express yourself and interact with your environment and to not lose track of that. You know how we always talk about how there needs to be a balance between spirit and science. There needs to be a balance between that yin and the yang. Okay, you're hard and you're soft. There's got to be that balance. Once you have too much of one or the other, it's over. It's the imbalances that put too much stress on that chain and the chain breaks and disease is caused, whether it be disease in your physical person or disease in society. You need that balance. So this is going to call a lot of questions of balance into play here again. Once again, it's going to be very, very interesting. I see Kelly Zatt in the chat room. Useless eaters, cull the herd. Man, sometimes you just can't go to the chat room for the solutions. Very, 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 very blunt people. I'm with you, Kelly. I think nature's got to be allowed to sift through the weak parts. We have to allow that to go. Because, of course, what is our scratching and clawing for, you know, longevity and endless amounts of years to our lives and looking for immortality and trying to avoid death? All of this comes down to fear. We fear getting old, getting sick, and dying, and having to transition into the next phase. I think the freeing element here is accepting that there's no getting around that. And actually, I've learned a lot of this stuff, and it's been sinking in. I've been honed in on this because of that the Carlos Castaneda book that came from Rob Corrado. And Murr knows all about Murr in the chat room. All you guys, I've been able to confront some things a lot better lately because of those books. Thank you to the Mexican shamans. All right, guys, that's it for tonight. 7:56. Coming up next here in the studio is the live broadcast of Social Circus, formerly known as Quarter Life Crisis. So if you know Social Circus or Quarter Life Crisis, whatever the... Gypsy, do you know if they formally made the transition on Facebook? It's still the Quarter Life Crisis page? Okay, so on Facebook, if you go to Quarter Life Crisis, the podcast, they're going to be going live right here from the studio. Tomorrow night is Friday the 13th. And I think we're going to be broadcasting on the Facebook fan page tomorrow night. No YouTube. I will be uploading tomorrow night's episode to the YouTube after we're off, and it will be on the podcast. But tomorrow night, we're going to be syndicated across the Capstone broadcast system. That's across about 10 to 12 amazing pages, pro-cannabis, pro-entertainment types of pages, really awesome pages, spans over 9 million like reach. Okay, so there's going to be a lot of new eyes on the show tomorrow night, and that's going to keep increasing as our new technology is installed and we're able to actually simulcast onto Facebook and YouTube at the same time. At that time, we won't have to take off any nights on YouTube. But for tonight, thank you guys so much. Love you all. Head over to the Patreon, patreon.com, and see if there's any room in your heart to support this show and help it really expand in that way. If not, share it with a friend. Tomorrow night, I'll see you on the, quite frankly, fake book fan page. That's good. Real good reads, Murr says. Word up, Castaneda material is bugged out, 138 says. That's Rob. So get lifted, everybody. Stay lifted. See y'all soon. Oh, good song to end with. Grace Slick. Jefferson Airplane. I'll have hookah packed for tomorrow night, too. Speaking of hookah smoking caterpillars.